Hello everyone, I am happy to talk today to Carolyn Galvin, a media and content production leader with over 25 years of experience working with some of the largest brands in Canadian media. She is renowned for executing world-class productions such as the Olympic Games, Grammy Awards red carpet shows, and premier sporting events, and has held senior executive positions at companies such as Rogers Sports and Media. Drawing on her extensive production and retail media background, Carolyn has created Clickit Media, a cutting-edge production agency specialized in live commerce, our topic for today. As a true innovator in the field, Carolyn leverages the power of live selling to not just drive sales, but also to redefine how brands engage with their audiences in real time. Carolyn's vision and expertise continues to shape the future of video commerce, making her a sought-after advisor and influencer in the field. Today, we are going to learn a great deal about the exciting field of live commerce. Carolyn, welcome to the IJK podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here today.
Thank you very much for joining us. So, Carolyn, let's start with this basic question. How would you define live commerce and how does it differ from traditional e-commerce?
Yes, that's a great place to start. Let's start at the beginning. Yeah, how I would, and in the industry, how live commerce is defined is basically when a brand or retailer goes live on a digital channel, a streaming platform, whether that's their owned channels or third-party channels, and does a live stream, and within that live stream enables product purchasing for the consumer. And there's many different ways that you can do this, and depending upon the technology you use, and it can be as basic as going live on Instagram and putting product links in to the description. I mean, that is a form of live commerce, to a more sophisticated solution where it's a very seamless experience for the consumer, where they're in a live stream with a two-way chat, and you can actually purchase products directly. Your checkout, everything is within that live stream. So there's a range of ways to do live commerce. And I wouldn't say it's different than e-commerce. I think it's a sales, how I would define it, is a sales channel within your e-commerce ecosystem.
All right. And my question is the following. Like back in the 90s and the 2000s, we had something similar, but happening on TV mainly, right? So does it have the root in TV channels and then it got exported to the internet? This is kind of what happened.
Yes. And you're right. And that I was the head of the content department at Today's Shopping Choice, which is a TV home shopping channel in Canada. But yes, live commerce is born from TV home shopping on a linear broadcast. And so I would say the foundation of live commerce is this idea of taking products, presenting them in a live environment. Relatively not unscripted, but very organic type presentation. And it has adapted, to a digital world. And I think the adaptation to digital is what's really exciting, in that brands and retailers don't need a huge expensive studio anymore. There's various entry points into live commerce. And again, it goes back to that two-way conversation. So instead of a one-to-many broadcasting out, and they're sort of to nameless, faceless audience, you've got people who can interact with you in the chat, ask questions, but also provide comments about what they like or don't like. And I think for a brand or retailer, it's a great resource, to find out what your consumers want and like. But you're right. Yes, born from TV home shopping.
All right, Carolyn. What are the key factors driving the growth of live commerce?
I mean, I think COVID was a massive accelerator in the West. I mean, I think we can talk about what's happening in China and Asia, but it was a big accelerator in North America and Europe for sure. But I think there's some other things that are happening in the market that are driving live commerce. And one of them is how ubiquitous and the emergence of video on social platforms. You know, I think if you look back, not that long ago, when you went on a social platform, it was mostly stills and comments. And I think with TikTok especially coming along and basically changing the playing field and making kind of video table stakes in any social strategy. And what the consumer behavior has changed to really expect video, and also, you know, finding it very entertaining. And so I think what's happened is for live, that's really helped accelerate live commerce, because that's obviously video. And so consumers are looking to be entertained through video on social platforms. And what has also happened is consumers also go to social media for product discovery and product research. And so if you marry these things together, where you've got live video about product, and then consumers also getting more comfortable transacting and, you know, having commerce as a part of their social media journey, I think all of that together has really pushed live commerce forward into the market.
All right. All right. So you're saying that the social media revolution and people going increasingly online was actually, especially during COVID, was actually a catalyst for the growth, the big growth that we're currently seeing in live commerce.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if you add on to that, through COVID, you know, when stores shut down, people went online and started shopping. And I think post-COVID, what we're seeing also is, you know, bricks and mortar stores have opened back up. But because of COVID, people are expecting a more omni-channel customer experience. And I think that's also helped accelerate live commerce.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there specific industries or product categories that have seen more success than others in live commerce so far?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a couple of categories that are big in the space, and those at the forefront would be fashion and beauty. And the reason behind those categories is the products are the types of products that are easily demonstrated and require demonstration and require a little bit more product knowledge, especially if you think about fashion. In a digital world, you can't try that product on. And this is, to go back to TV home shopping, what TV home shopping did so well is it brings the store to the customer. It brings the product into their living rooms. You can talk about material, size, fit, and that's where having a great host really helps live commerce in being able to, you know, inform the customer on what the product's like. So you see that in fashion. You see it in health and beauty. Again, products that you can talk about need some explanation and demonstrate. What we're seeing is, you know, it's growing, and what's becoming more popular is interior a design, like in home decorating, home improvement. But there's also some interesting developments in niche categories like collectibles. And so I would say that, you know, any product, especially one that you can demonstrate or you'd like to physically show, can benefit from live commerce. But certainly fashion and beauty are at the forefront of the categories where you see most live shopping events happen in those industries.
All right. All right. Now, when it comes to consumer behavior and engagement, like, I'm sure live commerce has totally different dynamics compared to video marketing or even like a passive e-commerce website where people have time to compare products and can even have time to reflect on their purchase before committing to buy. What are some dynamics that are specific to live commerce? I guess one of them is probably urgency, right? Like you create urgency because there's maybe a limited number of products that can be sold within that product line. And then seeing other people buying straight away on the spot may increase the social proof around that product. So can you tell us a little bit more about these dynamics that are specific to live commerce?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the key drivers of live commerce is that FOMO, fear of missing out. Something's happening. You know, there's either limited, like you said, limited product. There's incentive, an offer that's exclusive to that live event. And that drives a sense of urgency. And so what you see with that is that there's higher conversion rates. You know, there's, you know, a conversion. You know, there's various ranges, but really the average conversion rate for a live commerce event is 15 to 30%. compare that to traditional e-commerce, which, you know, is 2 to 3%. And so it really does, you know, people are in a community, it's a shared experience. And because it's a longer format and it's live, your host can also drive urgency. And to your point, there is certainly more incentive to purchase within that time frame of the live event.
All right, I see. When it comes to, so you mentioned the host now a few times. One of my question is, does the host need to be a celebrity or does it help to have a host that is kind of an influencer in his or her particular field to first attract viewership and increase sales, or it can be done by anyone in any company?
That is an excellent question. And there's many layers to answer that. So I would say it comes down to, so your first answer, do they have to be a celebrity? No, they do not have to be a celebrity. And some of the most effective live shopping events are from a brand ambassador or a founder, of a company who's great. You know, there's a basic requirement. They need to be good on camera and they need to be able to, you know, carry, you know, a live event, but they don't need to be a celebrity. Founders, you know, product developers are great because they can speak authentically. Again, it comes back to this. It's a very authentic experience. And so they can talk intimately about product inspiration. You know, that someone who isn't as connected to the product can't really, you know, talk to it that detailed. So they don't have to be a celebrity. However, to your point, an influencer can help bring an audience. You know, they can help drive people to the event. But, you know, with my advice to anyone wanting to engage an influencer would be to make sure there's an alignment, you know, with your brand, because bringing a large audience doesn't necessarily translate into sales if that audience, you know, wouldn't have a natural affinity for the product you're trying to sell. So there does need to be an alignment there. But I can't underestimate the importance of whoever is on camera for a live shopping event is like one of the key ingredients to ensuring success.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that point. And does it have usually to be one person running the live event, one host, or typically it's more than one person who's presenting running the actual live sale?
Yeah, it can be one person. It's a lot on one person to, you know, and this is where you actually see, especially in China with influencers, it will be one person and they go for hours and they just sort of bring product in and talk about it. And that works, you know, and that works for certain product. I think a nice mix is two people. And this was, again, if you look back to the model of live TV shopping, is you've got one person who's the product expert, who plays, you know, talks about the product, and then you have a host who would drive sort of the calls to action. And then what's nice about if you have two or three people is it's a conversation, and it's a very natural conversation, and it flows a lot better. But you can do it, you know, and I've seen brands do live shopping events with a host and multiple guests. So it really is unique to the product and the brand and budget and all of those things. So it can be one, as simple as one, and it can be multiple with multiple setups.
All right. Now that you mentioned China, you know, we can talk about my next question. And I think it's an important one. Live commerce for sure differs between markets. So we have it in one way here in the West, but I know for a fact that in Asia, and more specifically China, probably it's been like very popular there and then pervasive. Like we've seen it like in every single platform probably for a long time. So can you talk a bit about the differences between how does live commerce differ between those different geographies? And are there things that we can learn from those Asian markets?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a This is a very, very interesting question and a space I love diving into. So you're right. So China and Asia, I mean, they're 8 years ahead of us. You know, they launched live shopping in 2016. And so, you know, just naturally, they're more advanced and the customer's more trained to shop that way. But there are some cultural and some, you know, technical differences in how consumers shop in China compared to the West, whether that's North America or Europe. And so one of the big differences, and I think this is where you're seeing that drastic difference from, you know, in China, it's 20% of all e-commerce and like $500 billion or so. You know, it's a crazy amount of money driven through live commerce. But the way people, consumers shop in China is it's these massive aggregators and marketplaces like Alibaba and Taobao. And so that drive a huge consumer base to one platform that also has higher functionality in terms of that customer journey. So you're going on this big platform. There's so much to choose from, like an Amazon. But you're also able to do everything within that platform, transact, product discovery. And so this is where you're seeing these acceleration of revenue and conversion rates. Whereas in North America and Europe, there isn't a massive aggregator. It's very fractured where, you know, the commerce has various models where you're, you know, checking out on a owned website, or it's a bit of a broken journey on social. And so it's just not as seamless in North America. And I think what's to be learned is, I would say, and it's come a long way even in the 3 years that I've been doing this, but what I would say is what we could do is we need to remove the friction from that customer journey and not have customers have to click away from a live stream. You know, it's like, how do you embed that all into one journey? You've got them there, keep them there, and make it easy for them to purchase.
Okay, I see. And you mentioned that in Asia or China, approximately this represents, live commerce represents about 15 to 20%. Do we have a similar statistic for the West or for, let's say, North America or Canada specifically?
It's much, much smaller. And I don't have that statistic, but it's nowhere near that. I think the projection is by 2026 that it'll be, you know, 10%. But it, you know, there's a ways to go. And I think every year, what I hear in the industry is like, this is the year it's going to take off. This is the year it's going to take off. I think it is actually going to take off. And I think that's a huge part to TikTok Shop.
All right. So TikTok Shop is playing a big role in kind of making this available to the masses and mm-hmm. getting people to know what it is. Personally, for example, myself, I've never shopped via that channel. I've never bought something that is promoted live on social media. I've always been, you know, like using e-commerce the way most mm-hmm. people use it, like in a mm-hmm. passive manner. I go check products, I compare things, and I take my time before committing to buy. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting, you know, to see how this field evolves here and then to try it at one point to see how it works.
You know, and you've tapped into something also that I think is a difference that I didn't mention is there is a cultural difference in how consumers shop in Asia and in North America. And I think you're right. We are a little bit more reserved, and Canadians in particular are a little bit more reserved. And we there is much more of a consideration process, especially for large ticket items. We like to do our research. We like more product information and research around our purchases. And so I think that's just a cultural difference. So will it be as huge as it is in Asia? I mean, only time will tell, but I don't think you can deny, you know, that there's just behavioral differences by culture. And I think that then that's important when you're building a live commerce strategy is to really know the market that you're and know the customer and the customer behavior so you can tailor your live commerce strategy to match the consumer's inherent behavior.
Yeah, I see. Does it actually work as well for large tickets? I mean, even in Asia, are they, do they sell like expensive items as well, or just like mainly fashion items, as you mentioned initially?
Yeah, I think actually it's sort of, there's that kind of quick to purchase, fast, cheap and cheerful. It works really well for. And then what I would say is it actually works really well for luxury goods. And this is where you're seeing a lot of growth in the market around high ticket items, designer products. Because if you're going to shop digitally, if you're going to buy a high ticket price item digitally, you know, a live commerce event is going to give you that information that's going to allow you to, you know, make that purchase with confidence, as opposed to buying it from, you know, flat images on a website. And, you know, consumer reviews are massively important. But again, you see it in situation. You see, can see this product live where someone's talking to it and talking about features and benefits. So if you take, you know, a mattress, for instance, which is a high ticket item, you've got someone there who can talk to the type of mattress. If you're a side sleeper, you know, this would be the type of mattress you would want. It just allows you the time to really dive into a product. So it is very great strategy for high ticket items.
Okay. That's interesting. Interesting to know. Can you share some success stories or case studies, without making it too technical, of brands or one brand that has effectively used live commerce, maybe something that is renowned or something that we can relate to?
Yeah. So I think one of the brands I think is doing a fantastic job in live commerce is Macy's. Macy's has really leaned aggressively into a live commerce strategy, and they do multiple live events a week. And what I really like about what they're doing is they do it in their stores. So they have it in some of their flagship stores. And so again, it's that bringing the customer to the store virtually. And they've done bigger productions, but they also do these really simple two camera shoots, and they're in a store and it's a bunch of product. And there's, you know, a brand ambassador there, someone who works for Macy's who can talk about the product, or sometimes it's a stylist. So I think they've done a great job, and they've been doing it for a couple of years now, and they've really built it into, and if you go on Macy's website, when they're live, you'll get a little notification, you know, Macy's is live, and you can click on it. So they're doing a great job of capitalizing on their organic web traffic to drive viewers to their lives. But there's also a landing page where if you missed a live, you can go back and watch it. And if the product inventory is still available, it's still shoppable. And I think this is a super smart strategy. And this is also, you know, people think about, I think one of the fears of brands or retailers getting into live commerce is that it's an investment in time and money and resources to do a live event. And they think, oh, but it's a one and done. But what Macy's is doing, and what pretty much every platform out there allows you to do, is to take those lives and make them shoppable after the live event, or even cut them up into little short videos you can put on multiple platforms. So there is that initial sense of urgency and community around a live commerce event, but it can have a life after the live. And I think it's really important to note that.
That's interesting. Does it cannibalize, or may it cannibalize your standard classic online channel that is non-live? Or on the contrary, what you're saying is the opposite. It will actually increase the amount of product sold in the end.
No, I don't think it cannibalizes at all. I think it's value added. And you know, consumers want brands to produce more video. And so I think if you've got a video content strategy, you know, this is, live commerce is a great thing to add into it, because you're just giving more value to your customer. And it also is a great driver of brand loyalty, because it humanizes a brand. I think less and less, you know, you're a digital marketer, you probably struggle with this every day. Consumers, especially younger consumers and Gen Zs and millennials, they don't want to be marketed to. And so live commerce doesn't feel so much like marketing. It's entertainment. You know, it's, what do they call it? Conversational commerce. It's it's bringing the brand to life to your consumer and creating emotion around your brand and the products that you're selling. So I think it's a great addition and not a cannibalization at all.
That's cool. Does the live event or the live shopping event, does it have to include a discounted component, or it doesn't have to be always discounted?
I think it doesn't always have to be discounted. What I would say, especially if you're doing regular live events, if you're doing regular live shows and your consumer knows what to expect, I think that it's not necessary. However, when you're first starting your live commerce strategy, it is a big driver to get consumers onto the live, to get them to tune in. You know, you're asking people to give their time. So it is an important incentive to offer a discount. And then to go back to the difference between China and North America, that is a big motivational factor for Chinese consumers. They are there for deals.
Okay. And the deal is most of the time, you know, presented online in a live setting.
Correct.
Okay. Just to attract, as you said, the audience.
Yes. And the incentive, the promo, whatever the discount is, in most cases is live for that live event only, which drives the urgency, which increases the conversion. That's how you're accelerating your conversion rates. It's a get it now. Once the live is over, it's no longer 15% or 20% or whatever. You know, some of them are deeply discounted.
All right. But you're saying that it's not always the case as well, especially here. It doesn't have to be like a rule of thumb. Any live shopping is not necessarily a discounted flash sale.
No, correct.
Okay. I got it. What are some challenges that businesses face when implementing a live commerce strategies? I mean, I know it's an event in itself, and it needs preparation, and there are like multiple components that will predict the success or, you know, like failure of that event. So what are some main challenges that businesses should be aware of to run a successful live shopping campaign or event?
The biggest challenge I see is that going live and producing this type of content isn't a core competency that most brands and retailers have. Most brands and retailers now are, you know, getting up to speed on social media strategies. I think they're diving into video because that's what the consumer is expecting. Going live is a whole different ball game. Very little room for error, the planning of it. I think there's a lack of education around how even to do it, what platform to use, the strategy itself. And so I think that is a barrier immediately to why I see a lot of brands think like, oh, I don't know if this is the right solution for me. Once you decide you want to dive into live commerce, the next biggest challenge I would say is drawing an audience to that event. And so the biggest driver and the most effective way to do that is you need a robust marketing strategy around your live events. You can't just do them and expect people to show you. It's not a field of dreams, build it and they will come. You need to shout it from the rooftops that we're doing this, and whatever incentive you've got to offer the customer, again, strong calls to action and continually remind them. Because the behavior hasn't been built in most brands, consumers in this market yet. So it's new. It's new and it's building that behavior with your customers.
So in other words, you're saying if I run a live shopping event, it's advised, or even it's mandatory that I have set aside a budget to promote that event beforehand. It could be through ads on social media, or I don't know, doing like some form of advertising prior to the event so that people know about it in the first place. That's what you're saying. This is kind of one of the biggest challenges, right?
One of the biggest challenges, yes. And the places that you would run that campaign would be wherever you're engaging your customer. Social media, newsletters, you know, paid ads if the budget's there. but you're tapping into the channels on which you're driving your consumers, and you're converting your consumers. That's where you're going to go to execute your marketing campaign. Again, live commerce, if you're not using an influencer, you're not paying a lot of money for an influencer, it's not top of funnel. It's bottom funnel. It's about conversion, engagement. You know, I think with time, you're going to build that awareness, and it tends to push up a little bit more as people share it and talk about it. But really, it is bottom funnel marketing strategy.
All right. And in terms of investments, costs or investments from an advertiser's perspective or brand's perspective. So they need to set aside a budget for media just to promote that event. But also there's the cost of the event itself and the fees of the host. And I guess it's usually specialized companies such as yours that run these events, right? So these are like the two main costs that are involved in running.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to set aside a marketing budget and the production cost. But the production cost, depending upon, again, there's a cost if you're going to engage a technical platform, you're going to use a platform where you're going to get the complete seamless journey. There's a cost there, and there's a range of prices. Then there is production cost, whether that you're going to do the live on your own. You know, you can do it with a ring light and a phone, an iPhone, and it can be as simple as that. And there's a lot of SMBs and small businesses that do that and actually are quite effective. Okay.
Without any professional audio equipment or lighting and all that.
No. And why they're successful is because they do them regularly. So they don't just do one and then do one 6 months later. They do them weekly. You know, they do them with regularity and communicate the cadence to their customers. You know, I think for anyone looking to do a more elevated production, you know, that is when you're going to need to engage professionals to make it again align with your brand and the quality of your brand. You know, this is where you get bigger companies like Macy's has invested a lot of money into their live commerce strategy. You know, they hire professionals to host the events. They've got people in house that produce them. They build studios. But it doesn't need to be that involved.
Okay. But based on what you're saying, frequency is also very important and part of the success predictors of engaging in live commerce.
100%. I see a lot of brands and retailers want to try live commerce and they want to do one event. I actually discourage brands to do that because there is so much work involved and everybody's busy and, you know, everyone's trying to run their business. And so there's so much work involved to get it going that to do one, I don't think is going to be as impactful as if you said, okay, I'm going to try it for X amount of shows or X amount of months and then gather the data over time. You know, it's like saying, I'm going to open an Instagram account, I'm going to put up one post, and I'm going to measure the success of it.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you can, right?
It doesn't work.
And unless you're going to blow the roof off the budget for the first one and you're going to get a celebrity. But again, the customer's not expecting that. It's not as ubiquitous and common in the market. And so frequency also builds the viewing behavior and the pattern, doing it on the same day of the week, the same time. So your consumer knows, oh, right, this is when X and X goes live. I want to see what they have this week. It really does build that
loyalty.
Yeah. Loyalty. Yeah, yes, yeah. 100%.
Okay. What metrics should businesses focus on to measure the success of the live commerce initiative that they've run? Is there like one or two or three metrics that you really focus on in general that really kind of allow you to conclude, well, that event was really a success?
So I think the metrics you want to measure are dependent upon the objective of why you're doing the live. So there's some really obvious ones around conversion, engagement rate that you're getting, how many people you're getting on the live streams. But for smaller brands, you know, and this is what I work with some of my clients on, we obviously you know, go over those analytics, but we look at other things that I think are really telling in terms of brand health and what it's doing for the brand overall. Like there's your live stream, you know, what was the conversion? How many came? What was the engagement? You know, what was the average order value? Those types of things. If you're sales focused, if you're looking at building brand loyalty and brand affinity over time, some other metrics that we look at are, you know, what was the average watch time, you know, for the live event? You see really long watch times for live events. You know, I had a client, that audience watched for 9 minutes. I mean, that's a long time for a customer. And so what you're building there, that's when you're building your brand loyalty. And the other thing that I advise clients to look at is there's a tail end from your live event where, and we saw this in home shopping too, but there's a lot of local brands I know see this where you get a lift in website traffic and you get a lift in sales even post-event. So it's about 5 to 7 days after an event, brands will see increased traffic to the website, increased traffic on their social, and then increased sales, usually on the products that were presented. So like consumers are like you, where they watch it and they think, oh, I don't know if I want to buy this now, but they'll go back and potentially buy it. So there's a wide variety of metrics to look at, but those are some of the ones that aren't as obvious that I really encourage and work with brands to look at to measure, is this working? And anecdotally, I can tell you there's a local brand in Canada, fashion brand, who's for about 9 months now been doing regular live weekly live streams, both on their website and on Instagram. And what they say is their business is up overall in that time. And that's the only thing they've changed. They haven't increased their marketing budget. They haven't really changed the product. And they say this is the only thing that we can link it to is our business is up about 30% overall.
Wow. 30%.
Yeah, 30% overall, which is huge. And that is, but that they are committed to doing it every week.
All right. So again, we go back to the same idea of frequency and educating your audience about these live events and building loyalty at the same
100%.
Time.
100%. Yeah. Okay. And one more thing I'd like to add is also consumers look at it as a form of entertainment. And so I think whether they're shopping or not shopping in that live event, you're providing them with a really unique differentiator in terms of how they interact with your brand that they're probably not interacting with other brands in the market. And so if you're adding valuable content and entertaining content and educational content into their world, you know, that again strengthens the loyalty a consumer would have with a retailer or brand.
Absolutely. We've talked about the benefits and you know how it works. And you've talked briefly before about, you know, if a brand wants to do live commerce, it's better that they be ready to commit to doing it on a regular basis to really reap the benefits from this practice. However, are there any risks tied to live commerce? In other words, can a live event go wrong and then backfire against a brand? This, I mean, I know, you know, maybe you have in mind some examples, but could this worst case scenario happen as well? And what would be in general like a good way to solve that?
Yeah, I think the biggest risk, I think you touched on it. The biggest risk you have when you go live is that it's not a good customer experience. Something really goes wrong. Maybe you don't have the right host. And then there's a negative feeling that a consumer has, or they can't purchase the products in the way you've told them to purchase the products. And so there is a risk that the experience isn't great for the customer and that could hurt you in the end. To mitigate that risk, what I would say is it's important to be prepared. And I think this is where it's important to work with professionals. You know, if you, if you're serious about a live commerce strategy, you know, it needs to have as much attention as you would to any other channel strategy because there is this live risk. And so if you need to do a rehearsal, you need to test the platform, you know, you need to go through the whole journey and test everything out and reduce the risks. And so that would be one of the reasons I would say work with pros.
Yeah, that's where we talk maybe about Clickit now. Yeah. Can you maybe
natural segue
talk a bit about Clickit Media and what do you do, and then how can customers benefit from your services?
For sure. So Clickit Media, you know, as you set up, I mean, it's a full service agency. We deal with specializing in video commerce. We work with brands on their video commerce strategy, particularly live, but also shoppable video. And that ranges in everything from consulting. You know, I've worked with brands who want to do their own shows, but just want more information. So from consulting all the way down to managing every detail of a live event. And that's based on my experience and my team's experience in doing this live at massive scale for massive audiences. And so what we have the benefit of is knowing all of the things, the horror of knowing all the things that can go wrong during a live show, and being able to set guardrails in place to protect the live stream and make sure nothing does go wrong. Things will inevitably go wrong, but sometimes they're actually fun things. So I did a live show and we were in a jeweler's studio, and it was after hours and we forgot to lock the door. And so in the middle of the live event, the security guard came in because thought, oh, what are people doing in the studio? But it actually ended up being this really real fun, you know,
fun
the host
moment,
and the host and the designer laughed it off. And, you know, people were commenting on the stream, and it was this real moment that, you know, made it real and super authentic. So that wouldn't be something I would consider going horribly wrong. But for sure, you know, things will not go as planned as they do in live, but you don't want any disasters. You don't want an internet failure. You don't want your product not to be loaded in. You know, those types of things are things that are avoidable, quite frankly. So the benefit of working with someone like Clickit is you're assured a professional production at the end of the day.
All right. Okay. And do you typically work with larger brands or with businesses of all sizes?
All sizes. Yeah, all sizes. And it's a mix. It's a mix. There's some, you know, larger brands in the pipeline and a lot of smaller businesses. But it's, you know, it's there's no preference. It's absolutely whatever the brand needs, whatever the size of the brand, we are open to working with them, because I passionately believe, and we passionately believe, that it works. Live commerce works. And, you know, it's in its early stages and are really passionate about bringing it to consumers.
Okay. Another question linked to your services. Do typically clients work with you as an agency on a retainer basis, or you work on one-off events, or it depends? You have both?
Both. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I've worked with some brands and worked with them actually on building influencer strategies, because it wasn't a mature enough business to do live commerce. And that's, you know, more of a retainer, or it's a, you know, services for production, very much like you would work with a production company. So the models vary. Again, it really is just dependent on what the brand needs and what engagement makes sense for both parties.
All right. Carolyn, how do you see the field of live commerce evolving in the next 3 to 5 years, let's say? Do you see this changing drastically in the near future, or you think we need more time here, especially in North America, to really catch up to what's happening in Asia, for example?
I really do believe it's going to grow. I think we're going to see more and more brands, big and small, looking to put live commerce into their channel strategy. So I think it's going to grow, and I think it's going to grow fast. Will it be like it is in China? You know, that remains to be seen. The market's just so different, but it will become more common. And in fact, we're seeing data around more consumers saying that they've, you know, watched a live commerce event on a social media platform or a website. So definitely growth is in the future. And one of the things I think is going to make live commerce so powerful is as AI takes over more and more content production and more content is produced through AI, what I think is going to happen is live commerce is going to be a massive differentiator, because it's going to look and feel very different from AI generated content. And it's going to be something that consumers, I think, are going to gravitate towards. I liken it to live sports. You know, there's still a massive audience for live sports because it's live, it's unpredictable, it's a shared experience among the audience. I see a lot of that happening with live commerce, a lot of those trends being very attractive to consumers in the market as we move into a more automated world.
Okay, I see. So you don't see AI as a threat. On the contrary, it's something that will make live event all the more authentic and attractive, right? Because people will, at one point, will get fed up with all this artificial content that is created easily with AI, and then people would crave in the future authentic moments and authentic content, right? This is kind of what you're saying.
That's 100% what I'm saying. You know, people love products, but people connect to people. You know, I think it's human connection that keeps people coming back, and that is going to be what drives consumers to live commerce and conversational commerce. And those experiences is a very real connection that can't be fabricated. So I don't feel like AI is a threat at all. I think it's actually going to be great for live commerce.
Okay. And actually, does running live commerce events in themselves, does this process also leverage AI in one way or another? Or will it leverage AI more so in the future?
I mean, it does now. It does now, depending upon, you know, some of the platforms leverage AI in terms of on social channels, you know, products and comments and putting products into chats. And that's all done with bots, and that there is AI already used in that. But the presentation. So I think where you're going to see AI is in the back end. You're going to see AI making the journey very frictionless, very seamless, easy for the consumer, but the presentation is where, you know, and we're seeing it in other markets too, where they have AI generated news hosts and these kinds of things. You know, will live shopping get there? I mean, maybe, I don't know, but I have to think a real person is going to drive larger engagement and be much more attractive.
Okay. I've seen somewhere, I don't remember exactly where, but they say that the future of live selling is also going to happen in a virtual setting. So with those virtual headsets, and that, you know, you can connect with a virtual seller located in another location, and then they would pitch to you this product as if you are in the same room. Have you heard about these kind of science fiction inspired practices? Is this going to happen, or is this kind of all dreams for now?
If I only had a crystal ball. I mean, there's so much talk about the metaverse and this virtual reality world, and VR's come such a long way. I think there will be a place for it. I think the question is, at the other end in this virtual world, you know, is it a person or is it
an avatar?
Yeah. It's an avatar, but behind that avatar, is there a real person there? Or again, is it AI? And how, I mean, the AI is going to get more and more sophisticated. So it wouldn't surprise me. I am anticipating that's what's going to happen. So I think, yes. I mean, will it be universally adopted? I mean, it's so hard to tell.
It's hard to tell. You're right. I mean, for now, I think starting by implementing and using live shopping more frequently is already a strategy that works, and then brand ought to try this first before
they dive into the virtual world.
Yeah, exactly.
That's far more expensive.
Yeah. So Carolyn, first of all, thank you very much for this episode today. I want to end on a question. Do you have any final words? Maybe how can people find your services online?
Yeah, I think my final words would be that live commerce is a powerful, powerful tool if you execute it and leverage it correctly. So I would encourage brands even to reach out to me just for a conversation to find out more. As I said, I'm happy to educate. And how people can find me is on my website, which is clickitmedia.ca.
Clickitmedia.ca. That's great. Well, thank you very much. And I think it was a very interesting discussion that we had today. And maybe down the line, we can organize another one at one point to discuss the latest updates on that in that topic.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Bye.